Well, hey there, vinyl fans. You will never guess where I'm at. Well, actually, you may. I am in beautiful Melbourne, Australia this week. This week we, the Vinyl Guide, have gone to Melbourne, Australia to talk to some awesome record shops. So we've got a very, very special show for you. Actually, I should say we have two very special shows for you. That's right. This week, we are going to have a double episode. One on Tuesday, today, and the next on Thursday. So we've had so many cool record shops and contacts down here. We decided to make this week a double episode week. And for those of you who can't wait till Thursday to hear part two, we've put both episodes on the Vinyl District website. So simply go to www.thevinyldistrict.com and you can hear them all right now. And this week, our double episodes are brought to you by GrooveWasher.com. Clean your records and protect your vinyl investment with the Groove Washer record cleaning system. Just go to GrooveWasher.com to order yours today. And we're also sponsored by AsTheRecordTurns.com. As The Record Turns is an awesome record shop in Hollywood, California, but it services the world with original vinyl pressings. If you want a collectible copy of a very special record for you, go to AsTheRecordTurns.com or call Kevin today, U.S. area code 323-251-4895. And with that, let's start the two-part series for our Melbourne vinyl road trip.
Do you listen to and collect vinyl records? Well, you're in luck. Welcome to The Vinyl Guide, the podcast made for record nerds like yourself. Here's your host, the biggest record nerd of them all, Nate Goyer.
Well, hey there. Greetings, one and all. Welcome to The Vinyl Guide podcast, the podcast for fans and collectors of vinyl records. I am Nate, The Vinyl Guide, and this week we are in Melbourne, Australia. That's right, we are down under checking out some of the hot spots that you're going to want to hit when you go record shopping in Melbourne. Now, I must tell you a few things. For those of you who aren't familiar with Australia or Aussie culture, there is a bit of a rivalry between Sydney and Melbourne. It's a bit like San Francisco and LA, where San Francisco people tend to hate LA. And LA people tend not to even think about San Francisco. Melbourne people do tend to slag on Sydney a fair bit. And people from Sydney, well, look, they're just so focused on paying down their high mortgages and having decent weather that they don't put much energy at all into this whole city rivalry thing. Look, as a bit of an outsider, I've been in Australia now for 15 years, largely out of Sydney. I can tell you geography plays a large part in this sort of thinking. Sydney is on the east coast, on a very natural, beautiful harbor. The weather is always quite nice. Summers are great. Winters are quite bearable. I compare Sydney weather a lot to a place like San Diego, where it's, you get a few weeks each year, each summer, where it's unbearably hot. And then you get a few weeks in the winter where it's just absurdly cold. However, the rest of the year is quite predictable, quite nice. You could do a lot with it. However, when you go to south to Melbourne, it gets much colder. The weather's more unpredictable. You could leave the house in the morning. It's nice and bright and sunny. And by lunchtime, it's just bucketing rain. And then by 2 o'clock, it's broiling hot again. And in the evening, it's cold as can be. So that's the main complaint about Melbourne. I think most people have is just the weather and the unpredictability about it. But truth be told, look, if I was to start my entire Australian adventure all over again, I may pick Melbourne over Sydney. You know, Melbourne is quite honestly the artistic capital of Australia. It's where all the exhibitions are. It's where the artists tend to go initially. It's where some of the most unique architecture is. People in Melbourne seem to be better at overall communication. My wife, she's an interior designer. She kind of explained it this way. In Sydney, there's a beautiful harbor. There's a bit of a view. People tend to build their lives around outside sort of activities, around the view, around the beauty of the natural landscape. Whereas in Melbourne, just because of the weather, people tend to focus more inside, which really tends to mean that they're reading more. They're educating themselves more. They're speaking more. They're entertaining themselves with movies, art, and culture, rather than being on a beach or swimming as much. So, look, I know I'm way overgeneralizing, but that's just kind of how I perceive the difference. I'm glad I live in Sydney. It's very beautiful. However, at the same time, look, Melbourne is a cool town. It's got great districts. It's got excellent shopping, fantastic public transport. It's a cafe culture. There's a very vibrant music scene. And along with that, go great record shops. So this week, we are going to visit a bunch of those. So as I said earlier, it's going to be a two-part podcast series. In today's episode, we're going to hit up two awesome record shops. First off, Heartland Records in North Melbourne. Now, when researching where to go in Melbourne, I posted on a few, Melbourne websites, some Facebook pages about the best record shops in Melbourne. And let me tell you, Heartland Records was consistently on what people recommended. So we headed over there and we spoke with Paul, the owner, and he talks about his extensive history with the record shop, the specialties he caters to. He talks about chasing crazy people out of his shop and the dangers of ordering too many Creedence Clearwater Revival box sets. So after we talk to Paul over at Heartland, we'll head over to the suburb of Fitzroy and we'll talk to Ethan at Northside Records, the soul of Melbourne. Northside is a shop which specializes in funk, soul, jazz, and Afrobeat. And as most shops in Australia, they import records from around the world, but they tend not to visit as many of the common places like America or the UK or Japan. While they do some of that, they also go record hunting in Africa. So they visit some villages, they talk to the communities there, they look to purchase the Afrobeat records. So they have a very, very cool inventory in this shop, very unique stuff. And they're going to share some of their stories of record hunting in Africa on today's episode. So definitely stay tuned for that. It's quite incredible how it all works out. And today's episode is part one of a two-part series. Part two will be released in a few days. However, if you just can't wait and you want to hear part two right now, it's available at thevinyldistrict.com. Now, The Vinyl District, they put up the Vinyl Guide podcast episodes early each Tuesday morning in the U.S., 10:30 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. And we've given them the exclusive for a few days on part two. So make sure to head over there if you want to hear part two right now, and you just can't wait until its general release on Thursday. So alrighty, without further ado, let's hear from the Vinyl Guide sponsors and then start our Melbourne record road trip. Well, hey there, record fans. Did you know that there's a record store that specializes in all original pressings? Yes, sirree. That store is AsTheRecordTurns.com. As The Record Turns is a killer record shop located off Hollywood Boulevard, but it also services the world. Do you have a first pressing you're looking for? Maybe a Pink Floyd Piper at the Gates of Dawn? Or maybe a Funkadelic OG press on Westbound? Maybe even a James Brown original King pressing or an old school John Coltrane on Impulse? If so, email or call Kevin, area code 323-251-4895. If he doesn't have it, he will find a way to get it for you. And if you call Kevin now and mention The Vinyl Guide, he will throw in a free record with every purchase. It is that easy. Kevin has them all, so go to astherecordturns.com or call 323-251-4895. Tell him The Vinyl Guide sent you for a free record. Hey there, record collectors. I have a crate digging story for you. I was rummaging through some used records I found at a yard sale, and inside was a killer gem. It was Charles Mingus, one of his great albums. This was a first pressing from the U.S. on Columbia Records. It was a 6i mono version. So a killer album, and this was the absolute press to have. However, this particular record was filthy. It had dust and dirt and grime throughout. So I ended up taking it home for $20, and I used the groove washer on it. And within a few minutes, this record I paid $20 for was now worth $200, and it was all thanks to the groove washer. The groove washer is a terrific record cleaning system. It uses a special fluid and a brush that not only lifts the grime from inside the record grooves, but it dries quickly, and leaving a shiny, clean record ready for you to play. Now, I have a fantastic copy of this legendary jazz record that sounds full and gorgeous, and it's all thanks to groove washer. Groove Washer can be ordered today from groovewasher.com, and I feel it is the best manual record cleaning system on the market today. Certainly the best I've used, and it's what I have in my personal audio room to keep my vinyl investment safe and the records sounding great. So you can get started at Groove Washer today for $55 shipped. I reckon you should get the deluxe version that comes with more fluid so you'll be set up for a year or so of clean records, but that's up to you. Whatever happens, go to groovewasher.com, see which version is right for you. That's groovewasher.com, and they are made in the USA. So we're doing a bit of a vinyl road trip here, and I'm down in Heartland Records with Paul.
Right.
And I must say, whenever I asked people what record shops to visit in Melbourne, I unanimously came back, you have to stop by Heartland Records.
Okay.
So you've got a great shop. You must have a long history here. Can you tell me a bit about it?
Well, we've been in the current location for 3 years. Prior to that, we were around the corner for 20 years, so I suppose 25 years all up and a bit extra doing markets and, you know, the usual, starting off with the Crater Records and doing a bit of mail order and stuff like that. So all in all, probably 25 years.
Wow. Yeah. So it's always been about your career, your life has pretty much revolved around music and records. And
well, I'm a bit older than that, so I did a few things before that. I wormed my way into Australia because I was a chef, and then I've always collected records though and liked records, and then I just kind of fell into it and thought I'd give it a go as to make a living.
Mm-hmm. So, and at what point did you just click over to do from whatever to records?
Well, I was a chef and I got retrenched, and I thought I was already selling at markets and record fairs, and I just thought, well, I'm just going to give it a go and see if I can make a living out of it. Well, I just had a child at the time. It probably wasn't the best decision. I had no money and like two crates of records. That's a real hard luck story. And it used to rain every time I did a market, but yeah, I persevered and it was okay. It was hard work, but yeah. I didn't really know anything about that side of it. I just learned as I went on, and mm-hmm. yeah, Melbourne's a good place to do it. There's a lot of people, they know their music, and it made it easier.
Mm-hmm. And as most people know, that once you start selling records, it's not long before you become a millionaire with multiple houses. And
that's right. Yeah.
How's success been treating you?
Well, record boxes are good to sleep in. They're nice and warm. You get the bubble wrap as well, so it's not all bad. But yeah. No, it's okay. I don't own any houses or anything like that, unfortunately. I could build one out of some of the poor buying decisions I've made over the years from the CDs I've got out the back. But yeah, anyway, no, it's okay. It's a lifestyle thing. I like it. I get to hear music and I don't have to buy things that turn out to be no good. I can hear them first. So if you're into music, it's a good job, but it's hard work.
Oh, I imagine. Now, in this shop, it's, I would say, maybe 60-40 records to CDs. Is that?
Probably, yeah. Probably is, yeah. Probably, yeah, one-third CDs now and dropping. But CDs do actually still sell, so we do stock them still. And, yeah, mm-hmm. we do all right out of them as long as you're selective.
So you've been in business long enough. You've seen the records ebb and go. Flow.
Yeah. Well, they were. It was hard to get them, especially in the 90s. But I mean, we've always imported everything, so we still got stuff from England and, you know, America or whatever, mainland Europe. So we always had records, but there were fewer and fewer titles at the time. And I suppose the one thing about it, the price was a lot better back then because, you know, they were apparently gone. But now they're back again and they're popular. They're expensive.
Yeah. So is the vinyl revival.
Vinyl revival?
So the vinyl revival, yes. Mm. Whatever that word is. The vinyl revival, that's been fairly good for business?
Yeah, no, definitely. It's really, really just keeps picking up and up, you know, every
year.
It's
nice to see them back. It's nice to have
it
kind
is,
of big things.
It is, yeah, and all the back catalogs being pressed again. And, you know, there's good and bad. There's people jumping on the bandwagon that you probably wouldn't expect to see on vinyl, you know, Justin Bieber and people like that. So
is it selling?
I don't know. I don't stock it. I have no clue. There's no way I'm stocking that. Thank you. And someone might want it. No one's ever asked for it either, by the way. So that's good. We're in the right store.
Well, with all the records coming in here, what are some of the rare ones you've seen?
Well, there's been a lot over the years because I used to kind of specialize in secondhand collectibles and stuff. I can't think of any titles off the top of my head. What we had recently. Ramillies versus someone or other we had, which was a default. It's probably the most expensive record I've ever sold, but I sold it online because I didn't actually know what it was. And it went. We sold it for $1,800 and I didn't actually pay anything for it because it didn't look like it was worth anything. I can't actually think. What was it, Ramillies versus someone? Mm. Yeah, it was one of the first hip-hop 12-inches, but people collected it for the artwork. So that we did all right.
So it
that.
Came in like a box, an unknown box.
Came in a collection of stuff, and it came in right before Record Store Day about 2 years ago, and we went through the boxes and put everything we knew in the shot, and then there was the two hard box, which was 12 inches with no covers, you know, kind of DJ stuff. Mm-hmm. And it was in there, and I couldn't really work out what it was, but yeah, it sold for $1,800. I was like, Jesus Christ. Anyway.
That's a good month.
That was all right. Yeah, that was good. Yeah, I don't want to ever see it again. It was quite stressful selling it, but we had prog rock stuff and rare. We used to specialize in gothic and stuff like that. I had a lot of rare stuff like that come through. I just can't think of random titles. But
you've got quite a bit of metal here. I see. It's very
heavy. We were metal gothic. When we were in Peel Street around the corner, we were sort of known for that. But we always had other stuff as well. But now we've moved. It's only 2 blocks away, we've got a lot more of a varied clientele, and yeah, we sell a lot more different titles now. Mm-hmm. So
it's pretty clear you specialize in more of the rock. Is there a lot of hip hop here? A lot of soul?
We've got hip hop section and a soul section. They're not the biggest sections, but they turn over, right? We've obviously got some decent titles in there, but they sell mostly new. We don't get that much secondhand of those genres, really.
I tend to, and again, this is an outsider's view of Melbourne, but I get the impression that metal is huge here.
It is popular, definitely. Yeah, but metal's popular around the world. I mean, I kind of came from that background. I'm from England. I've been here, I was going to say 25 years, but I've just said I've had the shop for 25 years. So I've obviously been here longer than that now, so it's probably getting close to 30, but I kind of come from that background, and it's bigger. It's big everywhere, really. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, and it always has been. I think it always probably will be. Other things come and go, but we never really just been a metal shop and never advertised ourselves like that, but we do have a good selection, yeah.
And where do you get most of your used stuff? Does it come in the door? Do you import? Do you travel to bring it back?
Yeah, I go to England every year on a buying trip and buy as much as I can buy. I bought like 1,000 records last time. That was in November. And then, you know, we get people selling us stuff. I go to record fairs, you know, garage sales as well. Just stuff comes along sometimes, but it's not like America. It's not that much secondhand here, you know, in the first place. And it's the actual good quality stuff. People tend to hang on to it these days because vinyl's popular again now, or, you know, they're reluctant to sell it, I guess. Whereas 10 years ago, 15 years ago, you could find stuff all the time. Not now.
No, it's hard to come by.
Yeah, no, the people aren't selling it. Yeah.
So what's a record or two that you could have sold 10 of them already if you had them in stock?
Prince, probably. Nah. Well, we sold a few Prince ones.
Yeah.
Secondhand ones.
That tends to happen, though, when you get like the Bowie and Prince.
I know,
Prince,
it's bad. We sold everything of Prince the next day. We didn't have a huge amount because he just toured here recently and we sold all the good stuff then. So we were pretty low on stock, but everything we had went the next day. So, yeah, there's not that many things now that are in demand secondhand because a lot of it's in print new and we stock it. So those sort of classic titles, the things that people want are the really obscure stuff that, you know, you're not going to find it. Mm-hmm. And if you did, they're not going to pay $1,000 or whatever it goes for you. You just can't find it, especially not in Australia. Mm. There's probably 2 copies came here in the first place. And, where are they now?
Yeah. Now, one thing I notice is you've got a lot of the Record Store Day exclusive releases, which is actually fairly... I don't see that many in Australia.
Well, yeah, we always get a good fill of those, and I like to buy enough to keep us going for a while. So, if people come in later on, they're artists that we sell on a day-to-day basis anyway, so it's good to keep them in stock for longer than just Record Store Day.
Sure.
That's an excuse for overbuying, or I bought too many and I can't sell them. That means
what's the one you bought? What's the biggest mistake you bought?
Oh, God. Here's the biggest mistake. Sorry, no offense, because I like Creedence Clearwater Revival, but I ordered 5 of the deluxe box sets for Record Store Day, and then the list came back up just before Record Store Day saying, we've got more stock of this. If you want to order any more, I thought, no, I need more of those. So in the end, I got 10. I didn't sell one of them. I've still got 10. That, you know, you could live inside those if you stuck
there
them all
you
together.
Go. Okay.
But yeah, that's, it will sell, but that's, I really thought that that was a nice item and that would sell on the day. But no, you know, Star Wars picture discs and Disney albums all went, but Creedence box set with all this stuff in it, no, we didn't sell one. I mean, it's the price as well. It's $250. It's not cheap.
It's all Creedence Clearwater. Yeah,
yeah, it's the first three albums and books and CDs and bumper stickers and God knows what else. Nah, didn't sell. Yeah, that was a fatal error, that one. I should have just stuck with five. Then I wouldn't have sold five.
Oh, fair enough. So if anyone out there wants a Creedence Clearwater box set or what appears to be a very blunt weapon, they have them here at the Heartland Records. So tell me, have you ever had a celebrity, famous person come here?
Have we? I'm sorry.
No worries.
I'm not sure. I don't get that many famous, but my powers of recognition, I probably wouldn't recognize people anyway. Jello Biafra came to the other shop a couple of times, but he hasn't been to this one. And like, he's a big record collector, so he comes in. Jay Mascus has been in to the old shop, not this shop. So yeah, I don't get that many famous people. Oh. Mick Harvey lives around the corner in the street, so he comes in every week. He's from the, you know, birthday party, plays with PJ Harvey, people like that, so... Mm. He's a celebrity, but yeah, we see him every day virtually.
Yeah.
So.
Kind of wears off after
a while. Yeah, I haven't had that many people.
Mm. So tell me about the last person you kicked out of here.
Last person I kicked out. It's hard to say.
There's been so many.
I kicked a guy. She's laughing. I copped them all. She's never here. I have to tell her the stories. It's like,
you get all the weirdos.
I do.
They see her and they know she means business.
I kicked some guy out the other 2 weeks because 2 weeks ago he kept asking me, how are you going to survive, mate? And I don't know what he was. He was just a pain in the ass, this guy. He was trying to trade me. It was bad. Like, he came in on a Sunday and I'm minding my own business and he's... He wanted to buy a $4 Marilyn Manson CD. He didn't have $4 on him. He offered me his phone. I said, I don't trade personal belongings for CDs. $4 CD. He goes, how about a packet of cigarettes? Which in Australia is like $25 for a $4. I said, no. I said, like, don't do trades. And then he went away. He said, I'll come back for it tomorrow. And he went away, came out half an hour later, and he had this leather hat on that he didn't have on when he came before. He goes... This is what he said to me. He said, I just stole this from the market. I was going to swap it for that CD, but I've taken a liking to it. I'm going to keep it. I had an argument with him and I kicked him out. I mean, Jesus, what's wrong with these people? So, $4 CD.
I'm telling you, though, maybe a guy like that does need one more Marilyn Manson CD.
Yeah, you'd think he'd have it already. It came out like 20 years ago. Now, then he got upset with me because I told him to leave and he was abusing me. And yeah, I think that was the last person I kicked out.
Well, fair enough.
We're fairly forgiving.
Well, you seem to be, but there's a certain level where it's like, okay, no more shenanigans.
Yeah, well, if he hadn't come back the second time, he would have been all right. But he came back with me. He just kept saying stupid things to me. If Nick Cave's son had signed his album, would the Nick Cave albums be worth it? Things like that. I said, I'm not even going to answer that question. Yeah, that's just ridiculous. Yeah, things like that. It gets to you after a while. I think my football team had lost the night before or something. That would set me off. So I've got a low level of tolerance on certain days.
So when it comes to the record shop, what's the future for Heartland Records?
Well, we're just trying to basically consolidate where we are and we've get a website sort of up to scratch and things like that. We're just doing more of the same, really. We haven't got any sort of ongoing great plans. It's just... trying to maintain the level we're at, which is not that easy at the moment because there's so many releases and so much going on. It's just a lot of work to keep up with it all. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't know what I used to do before all of vinyl was popular again and the internet and everything. Mm-hmm. I don't remember sitting around doing nothing, but now it's...
So do you get the same kind of margin on records that you used to on CDs? It's just you have to sell more records?
It's always been roughly 30%, but because of records, you know, they're expensive and the way, and you have to, you know, some of them I just think I can't put that much on them because it's just a ridiculous price, and therefore you're not making your margins really.
Mm.
CDs, I think it was about the same. You never got any more than that. It always seems to be around 30%, which is low. Mm-hmm. A low markup in any industry, I think. Yeah.
You know, I was in the States recently, and one thing that's making a comeback there is cassette tapes.
Yeah, not on my watch. There's a box of blank ones down there. They're the best ones I've ever heard. I've heard about that. I never ever sold cassettes, and
Not about to get in that game.
No, I'm not really. I've never been a fan, or I've got nothing against them. Good luck to them, but yeah, it's not for me. I've got no room for cassettes. That's the problem.
It's very strange. I don't get it either. But apparently, there's a lot of people out there with still kind of the cars with the cassette decks, and they still, and it's a cheap way of being able to manufacture. So. You know, that seems
Would it be that cheap anymore, though? Because are they set? I don't know if they're geared up to do it anymore.
That's the argument that I've been told. But I can't imagine things much cheaper than a CD, which you can burn for about 4 cents.
Yeah, CD would be very cheap to make. I mean, when I first started my shop, I remember getting wholesalers and cassette prices. They weren't far off the price of a record. And I just thought, who would order those in? Like, who would pay roughly the same price as a record for a cassette? I don't know. I never got that.
So do you have a record collection at home?
I do, yeah. Some of it's here because it doesn't fit at home.
Yeah. How do you, when a record comes in the shop that you want, how do you kind of make the decision whether it stays in the shop to sell or whether it goes home with you?
I don't keep that much new. If it's new, I kind of work out roughly from experience if I'm going to get it again. If I think there's a risk I'm not and it's a band I happen to like or an album I like, I'll keep it. Otherwise, I just let things go and a lot of things I don't keep, especially secondhand stuff. I mean, I collect a few artists, and if something comes along by them I haven't got, then I'll keep it for sure. But there's not that many things that come along like that. And there's some albums I upgrade them maybe, get a better copy or better pressing. But I'm reasonable about it. I don't keep that much, really.
Is there anything you're personally looking for out there? Like you want to see come in the door today? Which one?
Well, yeah, Green River, that only just came out. That's the one Record Store Day thing. You know, there was only about two things I wanted from Record Store Day. One of them was the Green River Demos LP, and I didn't get that. For some reason, we didn't get any copies of it, so I'm after that. But
the Green River Demo, who's
yeah,
that?
Yeah, Green River's a band. Oh, okay. It was originally members of like Mudhoney and Pearl Jam. Mm. They were in a band called Green River before then, named after Creedence, who... We have the box set here. I thought it was advertised on radio. there's things I'm after, but a lot of things it's just when I see them type thing. I mean, I collect Alice Cooper, I collect Sisters of Mercy, a few other bands like Hawkwind as well. I don't sort of collect Hawkwind, but I've probably got 100 LPs. I don't collect all their singles or anything, but if I see something, I'll definitely buy it.
You've got 100 Hawkwind LPs.
I reckon I have, yeah.
Holy cow.
But they've done a lot of albums.
Oh, I know.
Maria's heard them all. They have. I mean, some of those are like different, but they haven't done 100 studio albums, but there's definitely, there'd probably be 150 albums out there to buy.
Yeah, you got all the Dave Brock and the Turner one. Yeah, so you get the solo stuff and everything across.
Oh, this is mostly just the Hawkwind stuff. Yeah, there's a lot. Mm. A lot of albums. Like Sisters of Mercy, there's... I don't know, I've got 800 or 900 items. I only did 3 albums, so you know, you can imagine what the rest is. It's all like unofficial this, and you know, there's always stuff out there on bands.
Mm-hmm. Do you see a lot of bootlegs come through?
Not as many, you know. I like, you know, one of the first records I ever bought in my life when I was like 14 was an Alice Cooper bootleg, which I still have, and I really like that stuff, but you just don't see those old sort of, you know, the old school bootlegs come through. Like they used to. I don't know how many there were in Australia in the first place, but sometimes in England I find them. I like them, though. They're usually terrible recordings, but I don't know. I've got an attachment to them. Maybe
there's something mysterious about
them. Well, like I say, the Alice Cooper one would be one of my favourite albums, and I played it hundreds of times. I swapped it for a pair of jeans, actually, because I didn't have any money, and I wanted it off this guy, and I swapped him for my jeans, and my mum killed me. I've still got the record.
You came home with just your underwear. And
well, no, I was he allowed me the decency to go home, but I only had one pair of jeans. I had to put my bloody school trousers on or something. I'd go back, meet this guy. He also made me sell my belt with it as well. It's like terrible. It's a deal, but I've still got that record. It's probably worth $250 now. That record.
So on it now, do you feel like maybe you judged that guy harshly who wanted to trade the hat for the
I didn't steal those jeans though. They were mine. He just told me I just stole this from the market. That was terrible. Yeah.
No, I know, yeah, but I wouldn't do that. I knew this guy. He was allegedly a friend of mine, but and he lent me the record, and I basically, I suppose, just wasn't going to give it back to him. But I would have done it if he made me, sort of thing, but I was trying to think of a way of not giving it back to him.
And giving him your pants sprung to
mind. Well, he asked for that. Yeah, I wouldn't have thought. A pair of jeans. I went, yeah, okay.
Well, look, thank you for spending time
all
with
right,
us and
you.
Sharing some of your checkered past. All that right. was particularly interesting. But Heartland Records, look, this is a great shop. And I can't wait to kind of look around here because there's some really interesting stuff. And there's some Record Store Day stuff that I haven't even physically seen. In Australia, the stuff I was excited about, so I want to definitely check some of that stuff out.
Yeah, we got a lot of it. Yeah, a lot.
Well, anyway, thank you very much. We do appreciate it.
Yeah.
Cheers. So, continuing our Melbourne vinyl road trip, I'm here at Northside Records in Fitzroy. I'm here with Ethan. Ethan, you've been a fixture at this shop for many years, yeah?
Yeah, I've been here probably 7 years, something like that, but I've been a customer since day one.
Okay, and when was day one?
Day one, I think, Northside, maybe 12 years, something like that, rocking through.
Same location?
Yeah. Same location, always been here, same, yeah.
Okay.
Always been full of funky records.
And now that is interesting to be that because this is a very funk, soul, blues-centric shop, yeah?
Yeah, soul of Melbourne, baby, with the soul of Melbourne.
An incredible selection here. And what's very interesting, I guess, you know, kind of traveling around, seeing the different types of record shops in different parts of the world, soul and blues was never deeply rooted in the Australian culture. This shop seemed to kind of defy that, yeah? I mean, it was always kind of the tunesmith. The influence from the UK was stronger, but blues and soul and funk seems to be from the US. It's more recent, yeah?
Yeah, for sure. Okay. I guess there was a little bit of soul, a little bit of jazz. There was a fair bit of jazz, and there was a bit of crossover with the sort of funky stuff getting into jazz. Mm-hmm. We actually just put out a record, Arena. Mm-hmm. It's probably the funkiest record ever to come out of Australia, and that came out, it was recorded, jazz funk record recorded in Melbourne. So that was something mm-hmm. in the 70s. But you're right, there wasn't heaps. But I think Melbourne's really had a big soul renaissance in the last 5 years especially. There's a lot of new soul bands coming through, you know, from, you know, Hope Street Records has Cactus Channel and a lot of those kind of groups. Bombo Royale, there's that kind of angle, and there's like newer soul bands, I guess Hiatus Coyote are a good example. Mm. Really taking that kind of, you know, really taking Melbourne soul to the world, you know.
Yeah.
Sort of, there's a lot of, you know, new groups coming through, like 3070, they're a band in that kind of mold, just released a record. So it's more happening now. There's, you know, there's a lot of records. So we, whilst we do sell a lot of old and secondhand records, we really put a lot of focus on interacting with the community and the music that's happening around Melbourne.
Right.
And really trying to incorporate a lot, you know, really trying to work with that in our shop and become, you know, part of the community. Or we are part of the community.
Yeah.
Just kind of, you know, really foster young talent and kind of, you know, young soulful talent and
so there's
move it through the shop.
So there's like a soul renaissance in Melbourne in the last decade or so.
Yeah, something like that. You know, that Bamboos, flying around from the Bamboos, Cook on Three Burners, all these guys, you know.
Okay. In terms of soul music from other parts of Australia, is there a lot from Sydney or Adelaide or Brisbane?
There's little bits and pieces, but it's really very heavily Melbourne.
Okay.
That kind of scene, you know.
And perhaps concentrated in the
in this area, like here, yeah. This is like Fitzroy is kind of the epicenter, and Northside is a real hub for that kind of thing. You know? Yeah, we really pride ourselves on it. We do, you know, every record store day, or you know, we have in-store gigs as well. So we have a little modular stage set up that we can just fix in here, and so you've got the drummer.
Okay.
We give full respect to the drummer. The drummer's sitting up about this high, you know, everything else around.
So I'll
get the singer up on the desk. Singer always dances on the desk. I'm not lying. This is a thing I can imagine.
And I'll describe it for the listeners. This is a small, I'll post some pictures on Instagram, but this is a very small, kind of thin, long store. So whenever Ethan was talking about putting a stage in here, I'm wondering, where is it going to go?
Just down here in the corner. So
okay.
The drummer goes in the corner here. Full respect to the drummer, like I said. So he's up nice and high, so these boxes here, so these come over.
Yeah.
It's broken into pieces for easy
storage.
Is it a
negotiation with the drummer, like how many pieces he's going to bring that day?
We've actually measured it. I made it myself, actually. It's like specially measured the exact right spot space
okay.
the drummer needs. We've got to We got it, man.
Perfect, perfect. Now, in terms of the shop, it's almost entirely records. And
yeah, we've got a few bits and pieces like T-shirts and that, but I mean, we're a record shop, so we sell records. We're trying to phase out CDs even, really.
Yeah. You know, records. Yeah, I don't even see any. That's cool. So that's great because we talk about records. We're all about vinyl here. So in terms of the used to new ratio, kind of where are you at? Are you 50-50?
It's probably about, say two-thirds used, one-third new.
Okay.
Yeah, because I mean, new vinyl you tend to move a lot quicker.
Yep.
You know, so you keep that rotating a lot quicker than the secondhand stuff can stay around for a while. We feel like we cover a fair range in the second hand, We've got, rock and sort of 80s. We've got lots of dollar records, it's good for people to buy a nice dollar record, take home, get nice and cheap,
Yeah.
Got all the jazz over here. And yeah, this is the new section in the middle. So it's all the new stuff is more focused on, jazz, soul and funk. But the second hand, we kind of go a lot broader. I actually just came back from a digging trip to Africa.
Yeah.
So I've got a sort of a secondhand African section that's kind of starting to really pick up. So you can see up the top, we've got some, nice sort of rare William Onyebo original records and that kind of thing.
So now I was going to ask you about that. In terms of used records, how much comes in the door and how much do you have to go out and get?
Well, it's mostly going out and getting these days, There's a lot of record shops in Melbourne. It's harder to buy record collections these days.
Mm-hmm.
There just isn't as much trading records, I guess, in that kind of way. Like most people that got rid of their records have already gotten rid of their records,
Okay.
You got to be on the hustle,
Yep.
24/7, trying to find them from wherever you can.
Now you said you just went on a record shopping trip in Africa. Where do you go in
or
Africa?
Digging.
Okay.
It's not really shopping there. There's no shops.
Okay. All right. So where when you go to Africa, like which countries?
This time I went to Ghana, Benin and Togo.
Okay.
So West Africa, so alongside Nigeria there. So yeah, just looking for Ghanaian, Benin,
so how do you
Nigerian records
in Africa?
Yeah,
there's no shops.
You just go up, look for old funky dudes, take a record, so they know what you're talking about. Like I'm looking for these, and they'll be like, "Oh yeah, yeah," Uncle might have some of those in the shop, in the shed. So call Uncle, go and have a look in the shed.
Right.
So yeah, it's pretty much
that's hard work.
You find them. Yeah, but when it pays off, it pays off.
Yeah.
And it's awesome fun, just going hanging out with all kinds of crazy cats and having, you've got that connection through the music, They're like, and they give you full respect because they're like, well, you come this far because you like our music, you got to be cool,
That's great. So you would do that most of the day, just kind of walk around with the record almost kind of around your neck saying, okay, I'm looking for this guy.
And then we drive off, So a lot of the time was spent traveling and messing about. There was a lot of downtime, but it was just, the process was so much fun, more so, as much as finding the records, but it was just a cool thing to do because I was like, what else am I going to do?
Yeah.
Go and look at crappy monuments and stuff. It's like, get to go out and meet my people,
I'm totally with you because my friend and I, we've decided that we'd rather be at a record fair somewhere in the world than be on a beach somewhere.
Yeah, hell yeah.
But I've never thought about going to West Africa to be able to spend the time digging for it. But that's where you find the gold, right?
Oh, hell yeah, man. I found some incredible stuff.
Now, you were familiar enough with the music to where you could say, yeah, that's one I'm taking home. Maybe
pretty much. Like, I've been looking for a lot of African records for more than a decade. So
okay.
I know. I know a lot more now that I've been, but now I know a lot.
So we've never talked about African records or the music of Africa. No. Can you give us a quick tutorial about kind of what's special about it and what we should be looking for in the records?
Oh, well, I'm a funk man myself, so everything like what I'm going to say African record, I'm looking for African funk, and African disco, and Afrobeat.
African artists, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
But not necessarily like traditional stuff. What I'm looking for is basically any African record that was slightly influenced by James Brown in any way.
Okay.
That's my kind of thing. Sorry, what's the question again?
Can you give us a tutorial on African
music? Tutorial? Well,
on African records.
Like. African records. So, like I said, anything is influenced by James Brown. So I guess my starting point was Fela Kuti. He's like the god of African music, basically. He invented Afrobeat.
Mm-hmm.
So my journey into African records started with Fela Kuti, which is probably true of most people who are into African music, especially West African. And he blended, traditional African high life with, funk of James Brown, the jazz of, Miles Davis and what the dudes in London were doing, and he created his own musical style. It was
it was definitely funky, but it wasn't funk, and it was definitely African, but it wasn't like any other African music. Right. So he made Afrobeat. So I guess that's where it started for me, and that kind of led me into, I guess, you know, the big thing for me is I'm a James Brown man, so seeing him influenced by James Brown led me to finding all the other sort of artists and records that were inspired by James Brown, and then you kind of move out from there. I guess it's the same way with any records, you know, anybody who gets into anything with records, you know, you find out about this guy and then you find out that guy's a producer, so you start looking for the records that guy produced, and then the web just keeps, you know, the tree just keeps getting bigger.
And I'm quite familiar with I guess the soul of and the music from the Western world. You know, Stax artists and different things like that. Yeah. But African artists are just a completely different...
Yeah, well, I think the thing I love about it is it's so different because it's like... It's really raw and honest. And it's like, it's basically the African guys like being influenced by that music. Hearing Stax and going, wow, I could... Yeah. You know, I'm going to bash that out myself, you know? And, you know... So, yeah, some really interesting... And it's hard to find and...
I would imagine. Yeah, I mean, you have to go.
But then, when you do find it, it's like it's worth it. You know, it's great.
Now, the quality. Would you the quality of the records that you found, the pressings and whatnot in Africa?
The pressings are actually pretty decent. There was kind of a point where EMI that really changed a lot of the African stuff. Sort of early 70s, EMI set up a studio there, and actually took a couple of guys over to London, and they taught them how to mix records and stuff. Funny story, and the first records they worked on was the White Album by the Beatles. Okay. They were like, we're going to teach you how to make records. These are the Beatles. Let's make the White Album. They're like, yeah, okay. Like two Nigerian dudes, Salami and M. Oki. Dude's name was Salami. Yeah. K. Salami and M. Oki. So, yeah.
So they came over to EMI and they showed, here's how you master a record. We're doing the White Album today.
Bang. So they did a bunch of records. They sent them back to EMI and they ran the EMI studios. Yeah, found all this amazing Nigerian sort of psychedelic funk rock stuff like Ofege. That's a name if you get on YouTube. People look up Ofege, O-F-E-G-E.
Okay.
That's EMI. Or Tiroge, T-I-R-O-G-O.
Okay.
Go look up their records. And like,
I'm glad you're spelling these.
Yeah.
I want to check these out later. I'll probably put
they're
some links.
Great stuff. Yeah, it's really great music. And that was kind of like them really influenced by, I guess, you know, like almost Led Zeppelin-y kind of, from somewhere between Led Zeppelin and James Brown.
Yeah.
Done by African guys. So that was, and they, you know, the pressing, not the pressing so much, the recording process and everything really stepped up after then. It was pretty high.
Okay.
HMV had a studio there as well. Philips, there was a lot of Philips stuff. So it's kind of, it was always something that interests me. It was like they were investing a lot of money into getting these records, but then they, you know, just selling them in Africa. I think they were trying to tap into a market. They were spending money like,
because
I guess record companies just had heaps of money then. So they were spending money. So it's not so much the recording. Some of the recording's a bit dodgy and, you know, a bit raw, but I guess it's like, you know, collecting rare funk 45s. But finding them in good condition, that was the that was the tough one. A lot of Africans didn't even keep their records in covers.
Okay.
They just stack them.
I would imagine some of the weather in West Africa is also not very...
Yeah, it's something to do with the weather is why they didn't keep them in the covers, apparently. It was like a theory, but finding them in good nick was hard because a lot of the time they were just... I've been handed, I got handed a box of an old concrete bag full of 45s, not even the cover. And I was just like,
can't do anything with
if
that.
These are in good nick. This is like, I'd have the greatest record collection in the world, you know,
right.
But they're all covered in concrete dust. So.
But you did find many successes while you were there. And
exactly, okay. Yeah. But that's only a small part of the shop is the African thing.
How much did you bring back? Just
how much did I bring back personally?
Yeah. Well, I mean, for
the shop, we've had maybe a good crate sold through here, but I've got my
you got your
my
stuff?
Tentacles okay. deep in there now, so I'm getting sent over
stuff
still, which is good. So there's more stuff always coming through for the shop.
So you go to so you went on a record excursion to Africa, elsewhere in the world, UK, US, any other?
I lived in Japan for a year and a half myself, but Chris, the owner of the record shop, he goes over to Japan and goes digging for records and bring them back.
Okay.
To sell here, that's always that always means there's a lot of good stuff in the shop, especially good soul, jazz, and hip hop over there, and the States as well. Chris goes over to New York looking for records as well.
Yep.
We've got a guy who sends us records from there as well. So
great. So what is, with all the records you've seen come through the shop, what are some of the ones that are really notable that you remember? The ones that, maybe the highly collectible ones?
I guess one big one we did have back in the day was the Hayu Percussion Group. That was a rare. I think Chris sold that for about $500. Like amazing Latin funk. Dancer's Inferno, actually, sort of jazz dance thing. That was a that was a killer record. There's a couple of nice actually some of the African bits, that Nonus Pedro record, that Nonus Pedro and the Band of Africa band volume 3. Yeah, and the other Nonus Pedro, there's artists from Benin. I picked up some Deadstock copies of that record, which, like I was saying, African records are hard to find in good nick. So when you find them unplayed, that's kind of like
really
a minor miracle. Yeah. So I was lucky enough to find a few copies of those.
Wow.
So, so we're selling the last kind of couple of those.
Far out.
Very nice.
So thank you very much, Ethan. We do appreciate it. And where can people find more about Northside Records? Is there a website?
Website, www.northsiderecords.com.au. We've got a mailing list.
Yep.
And anyone around the country, even, we do free shipping for any orders over $100.
Okay.
So it's worth subscribing to the email list, and you can email back, and, you know.
Excellent.
Get the funk.
We do appreciate it. Thank you.
Hold on. Thanks for having me.
Bye-bye. That's it for part one of our Melbourne record road trip. For part two, well, you're going to have to wait a few days or simply head on over to www.thevinyldistrict.com. See you soon.